This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A crackling fire this winter may be less of a romantic gesture than an economic one. As predicted, the Energy Information Administration released a chilling winter fuel outlook today. Hurricanes Katrina and Rita battered oil refineries and natural gas production along the Gulf Coast, and your home heating bills are headed up. If you use natural gas, brace yourself for a 50% increase, depending on how cold it gets this winter. And the outlook is not much better for those of us who use home heating oil, propane, and even electrical heat, though that's the least affected. As the energy squeeze tightens budgets even more, people will set their thermostats a little lower and try to conserve with energy-saving light bulbs and freshly recaulked windows. Many will look for deals where they can lock in fuel prices. A lot of oil suppliers no longer offer those arrangements, but they are still available in some parts of the country, particularly for natural gas. Heating gift cards could be hot stocking stuffers come Christmas. Manufacturers of wood and corn-burning stoves report a spike in sales, and retailers expect brisk business in the sweater department. Later in the program, we'll find out about the death of Syria's powerful interior minister. It's reported to be suicide, and the details of a letter from Al-Qaeda's leadership to its top man in Iraq. But first, how are you preparing for the rise in heating prices as the temperature drops? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A today to help explain this rise in prices and how high they might go is Howard Grunspecht, a deputy administrator for the Energy Information Administration that handles statistics, and I stress statistics rather than policy, for the Energy Department. It's nice to have you on the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
First, I guess one of the things is, though this report seems chilling enough, it was expected to be worse.
Well, we had done a preliminary look at this last month, and in the month that's intervened, we've gotten more data. We've gone back to see how some of the state commissions are handling the pass-through of wholesale gas prices into retail rates. And I think the number that caught everyone's attention last month was 71% expenditure increase in the Midwest. Now we're thinking it's more in the neighborhood of 61%. That's still a very substantial increase over last year.
But not quite as bad as it might have been. Anyway, can you break down for us how the, well, first of all, how hurricanes Rita and Katrina contributed to this specifically?
Well, hurricanes are definitely a part of it, but we had very tight energy markets even before the hurricanes hit. The hurricanes did disrupt production of both oil and natural gas, and did disrupt refining, which exacerbated the already tight markets. So there was definitely an impact from the two hurricanes.
Obviously, this is going to affect people in different parts of the country differently.
That's correct, because the use of fuels varies a lot by region. For instance, 7% of U.S. households use heating oil as a primary source of heat, but 30% of the households in the Northeast use heating oil, and really a very small percentage in other parts of the country. So things vary according to what region of the country you're in, also according to what specific fuel you use, your own decisions about how you set your thermostat, the efficiency of your home. So we focus on broad averages, but there's clearly going to be a lot of variation across individual households.
And that 60% increase in the Midwest, partly it gets cold in the Midwest, and partly they use a lot of natural gas.
It gets cold in the Midwest. They use a lot of natural gas.
And this is, you base all of this on averages, and I'm looking at your statistics now. There's three parts to this based on how cold it might get this winter. And it could, for example, in terms of natural gas prices on your colder chart, people could end up spending two-thirds more than they did last year.
That's right. The weather is very important. It affects the quantity of fuel that you use. There's a measure called heating degree days. And as the temperature gets colder, the number of heating degree days gets larger. So that's one effect is on the quantity of fuel used. The other effect is as people use more, the price goes up. So there is a double whammy as things get colder. There's a double benefit as things get warmer in that you use less fuel and prices may soften a little bit.
Indeed. And on the warmer side, the more optimistic side in this case, it would not be roughly 50%, but roughly 30%. So a little bit more tolerable. Yeah, I'm sorry?
But still a substantial cost for people.
Electrical heating, in the past, had always been seen as somewhat expensive. Relatively a modest increase of 5% expected there.
Well, that's right. If you look at electricity in this country, about half of it is generated using coal. 20% is generated using nuclear power, almost 10% hydropower. So really, the markets where we've seen the big price spikes in energy are oil and natural gas, and they play a relatively minor role in electricity. Oil plays very little role, natural gas some, but again, coal, nuclear are the dominant sources.
As you look at the way people heat their houses, we're going to be getting, I'm sure, calls about people who use wood pellet stoves, the corn-fueled stoves, that sort of thing. Is that a significant factor?
In our data that we collect every 4 years on residential primary heating sources, it's not the primary heating source for a large number of Americans, but there's no doubt that it's a secondary heating source for many. And as your introduction indicated, many people may want to use those sources more.
Mm-hmm. It is becoming an alternative or an additional alternative, even if you have a primary heating source of natural gas. A stove might not be a bad idea.
That's correct. But the people who sell wood pellets and cut wood also have seem to have increased their prices this winter, at least apocryphally.
Our number, if you'd like to join our conversation, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's talk with Jefferson. Jefferson calling us from Cleveland, Ohio.
Yes, good afternoon. My question is, I read an article yesterday that was talking about that we were exporting oil and natural gas out of the United States, and that was artificially increasing the cost of oil and natural gas to American citizens. And I wanted to know if your guest could respond to that. I'll take my answer off there.
Thanks for the call, Jefferson.
Sure.
Sure. The United States consumes about 22.5 trillion cubic feet a year of natural gas. About 15% of that is imported from Canada. A little bit is imported as liquefied natural gas. We do send about 0.3 trillion cubic feet of natural gas to Mexico. So we are exporting some natural gas to Mexico, but much less than the amount of natural gas we're importing from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we'd be better off in terms of our natural gas supply if we cut off trade in natural gas. On the oil front, we are a large importer of oil. We import more than half of our oil needs. We do send some small amounts of certain types of oil products to other countries, in particular some of the petroleum coke, which is a heavy residue that's left over from the refining process. We do export that. We export some residual fuel oil. We export a small amount of jet fuel. But again, we are really big importers of both oil and natural gas. So, yes, there are some exports, but I think overall the energy market operates a lot more efficiently because of trade. Some of the products we export we really can't use, like the petroleum coke, and we do import some things that we really need quite desperately, like gasoline and distillate fuel.
Let me ask you, as you looked at these numbers, Howard Grunspecta, was there something that surprised you, anything that jumped out at you as, well, that's unusual?
Not really. I mean, one thing that has been the case is the effects of Katrina and Rita, were pretty significant, comparing them to Hurricane Ivan in particular, which was a hurricane we had last year in the Gulf. The disruption has been large, particularly in the case of natural gas. Unlike oil that is traded internationally, and you can make up some of the impacts, and in fact we have. We're importing more oil products from other countries. The Europeans release some of their product stocks. It's really pretty hard for us to make up a lot of our natural gas shortfall from imports. We can import a little more from Canada. We might import a little more liquefied natural gas. Over time, liquefied natural gas will become a more important source for the country. But right now, shortfall in North America is pretty damaging.
Let's get a caller on the line. This is David. David calling from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Neil. How's it going?
Okay.
Hi. I have a quick question. I run a gas station in Portland, Oregon. And the question I have is, a lot of time when you see these natural disasters that happens, and they automatically, the oil company automatically raises the price for everything, even though they have, I think, months and months of supply on hand. Is there a reason why they do that? I mean, I could only imagine they increase profit by quite a bit when they do that.
Well, David, are you talking about gasoline or oil in general?
I'm talking about both, actually, because we do both of it here, and I know oil companies, they have hold a large stockpiles of it. And
thank you for the call, David. We do know about the strategic oil reserve the
right.
country has in former salt mines, I guess, in Louisiana
right.
somewhere. But
I mean, there's not there are some stocks in the system to make the system flow. Gasoline is an example raised by the caller. The nation consumes about 9 million barrels a day of gasoline. Gasoline stocks right now are about 195 million barrels. So it's not months and months. And the 195, you really can't run down to zero. In fact, the stock levels have for gasoline have never, in the last 5 years, been below 185. So we do operate on a pretty tight system.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we get one more caller in quickly. Mary in Portland, Oregon, as well.
I have a similar question. I have yet to hear a good explanation of why the cost of natural gas goes up simply because it's estimated we're going to use more.
Supply and demand?
Oh, I mean, supply and demand is the facile economist's answer. I'll try to help the caller a little bit more if I can. It isn't just that it's estimated that we're going to use more. It's that we've lost a tremendous amount of production already due to hurricanes Katrina and Rita. We used a lot more natural gas this summer because it was hot to generate electricity. At the peak electricity demand season, you burn a lot of natural gas for air conditioning load. So we burned more natural gas in August than we thought we would. We then lost a lot of production beginning at the end of August, and we still have production fairly depressed. So it is a supply and demand issue, but there is really an issue of lost production that I think is driving things.
Mary, thanks very much for the call. And Howard Grunspecht, we thank you for your time today.
Pleasure to be here.
Howard Grunspecht is Deputy Administrator for the Energy Information Administration. So what are you going to do about it? We'll have more on that when we come back from a break. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We've been talking in the earlier part of the program about how much home heating prices are likely to go up and why. Well, now let's brainstorm about how to beat the heat. Save a little money around the edges anyway. You're going to be paying more. But give us a call if you're having trouble deciphering your gas bills or are overwhelmed by volatile prices. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. One way to beat high heating costs is to buy your heat ahead of time. Betty Lynn Fisher joins us now. She writes a popular column for the Beacon Journal newspaper in Akron, Ohio, where she answers questions on how to find the best price on natural gas. She joins us from her office in Akron. Nice to have you on the program.
Thanks, Neil.
As we just heard from the Energy Information Administration, 60% higher on average in the Midwest this year.
Right, and that's, I guess it's a little better news than the 71% from last month, but it's not much solace compared to last year's rates.
Now, I understand your columns that address natural gas comparisons have become so popular that you've added a special message on your office phone for anxious consumers. When did this volume of calls on this really begin?
I've been doing these comparisons for about 5 years, and the calls have kind of increased slowly as people choose their suppliers and all year round. But I think since the hurricane in the last couple of months, as it's been more in the news that it's forecasted to be higher, people have gotten a lot more anxious, and I've been hearing a lot more from people.
Sure. Explain to us the concept of locking in prices on natural gas deliveries.
Well, Ohio is deregulated for natural gas, and so the folks here can lock in a rate. There are marketers here, if you choose another supplier besides the regulated utility, where you can either lock into a long-term fixed rate for perhaps a year, 3 years, 5 years, it runs the gamut of some marketers who offer a monthly variable. So it really allows consumers a broad range of choices, and it really depends on how they feel on what they want to choose.
But at this point, are these deals still available?
They are, but they vary, and actually they change daily. Some marketers are offering, as I said, a monthly rate, which is a month-to-month price change, and some consumers may want to ride the market and try that. Others may think that that's too risky and they want to lock into a longer-term rate. Prices, there are still offers out there. Prices are just a lot higher than they were before.
Now, how do you start this process when you decide to whether or not change your supplier? I mean, do you go to the dealers?
Actually, we have two state agencies in our state that put together charts very similar to what I do in the newspaper occasionally, where they will list prices, every week or every 2 weeks. The problem now, though, is that because prices are so volatile and changing daily, those are a good place to start. But then you call the dealers directly, or you go on their websites to find what the deal essentially of the day that they're offering is.
And is there a fine print that you should look out for?
Yes, you should always check about cancellation fees. A lot of the marketers will want you to, if you do lock into a long-term rate, for instance, cancellation fees are anywhere from $25 to $50 if you were to walk away early, let's say prices dropped. However, this last time around that I just did a look at prices last week, we had one marketer that was charging $150 because they're worried that if prices ever do come down and people walk away, that they'll be left.
Finally, how do you keep a healthy relationship with your neighbor if you find out that they've locked in a lower rate than you did?
the best way that I try to tell people is that think of it like buying an airplane ticket. Find a deal that you are happy with, and then don't ask the person next to you how much they paid for their ticket.
Probably a good idea, because they might not tell you the truth anyway. As you look around, are people, because of its deregulated market, are people competing for these contracts?
Excuse me?
Are companies competing for these contracts?
Oh, yes, very much so.
And so this is a good deal for consumers?
It is. Right now it's harder to say that. People don't feel that it's a great deal because prices are so high. But the bottom line is, if you are able to lock into a rate, because no one knows what is going to happen to gas prices. Hindsight's always 20/20. But, if you're able to lock in your rate and help, affix your budget, you are able to save some money.
Let's get a caller on the line. 800-989-8255, by the way, if you'd like to join us, or email us, TOTN@NPR.org. And this is Cindy. Cindy calling us from Richfield, Ohio.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
My question is that I don't understand how there can still be lock-ins, because I had a lock-in, what I thought was a lock-in, with First Energy, who then a few months into it or a year into it sent me a letter and said, you know what, we're getting out of the residential supply market, so you'll have to find another carrier. I find another carrier, lock in for $5.95 per MCF, been in that lock in for, it's a 4-year lock in. I get a letter 2 months ago saying, you know what, we're going to stop offering you that $5.95 per MCF rate, and we're upping it to $12.95 per MCF, and that will be reflected in your next month's bill. How can they do that? How can they unilaterally change the rate on us when we're supposed to have a lock-in?
I suspect what happened with those companies is that they made a business decision not to participate anymore, and they may have then bounced you back to the regulated utility or...
Obviously, I had to leave First Energy because they got out of the residential market. Mm-hmm. But then I got into the Dominion lock-in for 4 years, and the Dominion has determined, after they had us in this program with this rate locked in, is now sending letters out saying, you know what, we can't charge you that rate anymore. We're going to have to more than double it. You've heard of this, right?
I actually haven't heard too much of that. Typically, what the companies are doing is that they are purchasing the right, like right now, if you're locking into a 3-year rate, they're purchasing the right to buy your gas for 3 years ahead of time. And they should, if they did it right, they should have bought enough gas at that rate.
Well, this is Dominion.
But if Cindy wanted to call a lawyer, might she have recourse?
I don't know. She might actually try to call the state commission and see if she does have recourse.
I would think that I'm just one of very many people that this has happened to that have received this letter in Summit County, and I'd sure like some other people to call in and say if they've received the same letter.
Mm-hmm.
That ought to be cause for, class action lawsuit, or at least an explanation how they can unilaterally change these lock-in rates.
Well, as Betty Lynn Fisher is suggesting, maybe the state agency is the first place to go.
Okay.
Well, good luck.
Send me a copy of that letter, too.
Okay, I will.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Cindy. Let's bring another voice into the conversation now. And this is Tom Silva, who seals windows and fixes furnaces as part of PBS's popular This Old House home improvement program. He's also on the editorial board of This Old House magazine, which will feature some energy-saving insulation options in its November issue, which goes on sale this Monday. Welcome to the program. Good timing on that insulation deal.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Tell us what you think are the most effective ways to conserve energy so no matter what source of home heating fuel you use, you can keep the prices down.
Well, there's all kinds of ways. You can simply start off by tightening your house up by simply using, caulking. You can use caulking around your doors and your windows, around where it meets the trim. You can weather strip your doors and windows, and simply by installing a good lock system around your windows to tighten them up makes a tremendous difference.
And those things aren't all that expensive.
They're very inexpensive, and it's a weekend project.
Is there one project that you might say is the most overlooked, easiest option?
Yeah, absolutely. To tighten up the cracks around your doors, weather stripping your doors, not only on the side and the top, but underneath the door, that bottom piece. The walls of your house meet the foundation or the footing, to tighten up that spot simply by injecting a foam in a can that you can buy at your home center, weather stripping the bottom and the top of your double-hung windows and locking your windows makes a tremendous difference.
Hmm. How do you know if it's time or if it's a good idea to replace insulation?
To replace insulation?
Yeah.
Well, if your insulation's wet, it needs to be replaced. As far as replacing the insulation itself, you shouldn't have to replace it. You can add to it.
And that might be a good idea anytime.
Absolutely. Think of it on a cold, wintry night. If you're sleeping in bed, what do you want to do? You put another blanket on to get warm. Well, your house needs the same thing. Add another blanket of insulation, whether it's a bat or a blown-in type of insulation, on top of the existing insulation, makes all the difference in the world.
Well, let's get some more listeners on the line. This is Sarah, and Sarah calling us from Sacramento.
Hi, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Hi, I wanted to call and just mention something that my husband and I did. We had the old metal windows in our house, single pane, and we replaced them with dual pane vinyl windows that qualify for the energy efficiency program. And we actually kept track of it, and our bill went down 30% from the time that we replaced the windows. And you could really just even go up to the window and feel how much, before the windows were really cold. And when we got the new windows, you can actually feel how much warmer it does, make the house. So
30% is going to pay, energy prices, that's going to recoup your costs pretty quickly, too.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite expensive. I think, we ended up paying about $7,000 to put them in, but we, definitely in the 5 years we've had them, we've, saved a lot of money off of it. So,
Tom Silva, that's not an option for everybody, but is it a good idea?
Absolutely, it's a good idea. The simplest way, again, is to simply tighten up the windows. Now, there are alternatives in finding out whether or not you don't have the extra money to spend $7,000 or $10,000, whatever the option is to replace the windows in your house. But you can save an enormous amount of money by tightening up your existing windows with the weather stripping and locking system and simply applying any type of a storm window, either on the exterior or on the interior of the window, makes a tremendous difference. There's all kinds of storm windows, from triple-track aluminum storm windows that go on the outside to a wood frame a storm window with an aluminum insert to a vinyl-framed window on the inside with a complete piece of glass that basically encapsulates an airspace, which creates a barrier that slows down the draft and allows the heat from the house to stay in the house because it becomes like a thermal barrier.
It
makes a tremendous difference. So you got to weigh the cost of how much you're going to spend to replace the windows, and then how long is your payback going to be, and simply are your windows in good enough shape that you can keep them and then spend a fraction of the cost of the new windows and simply install a good quality storm window.
Sarah, thanks very much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
And for the suggestion. We appreciate it. Here's an email we got from Mark Paris. We heat using electricity. My wife and I were thinking that adding a wood or preferably a pellet stove, we live in Portland, Oregon, would that kind of thing be worthwhile? We already have a chimney available, so it probably wouldn't cost that much to install.
Well, if any type of a heat source that you can add, you're basically taking the burden off of your main source of heat, but it can help in some cases. But you know, you got to weigh the cost of the stove, you got to weigh the cost of the chimney, you've got to weigh the cost of installation of that stove, and then you've got to take into consideration the time that it's going to take you to load, pick up the pellets or the wood or the whatever you're going to put in that stove to work. It now becomes a more labor-intensive for you. So you've got to look at those options as opposed to the amount of money that you would spend for that stove. How much more would it cost you to tighten up your windows, tighten up your doors, install more insulation, whether it's in the walls or in the attic? Also, insulating around the perimeter of your house at the sill or any voids. And then also, another way to save money is to install pipe insulation on your hot water lines and your cold water lines, but also
on cold water lines as well.
Well, I like to do the hot and the cold because in the summertime, your cold water lines can condense. And so by doing the cold water lines in the summertime in humid conditions, they don't condense.
We're talking today about the spike in energy prices that's going to affect all of us this winter and how to deal with it. Our guest is Tom Silva. Also with us, Betty Lynn Fisher, consumer columnist for the Akron Beacon Journal. And Betty Lynn Fisher, we wanted to thank you very much for your joining us today to talk about locking in natural gas prices.
Sure, no problem.
And Betty Lynn Fisher joined us from her office in Toledo, in Ohio, excuse me. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another email. I have a 100-year-old home in St. Louis. The floor of our usable attic is insulated. Should we insulate the attic rafters? The house, she says, leaks like a sieve.
Does it mean it leaks like a sieve with water, or is it air?
I suspect she's talking about air.
Yeah, I know. I'm teasing. Well, you got to think about the utilities. If she has a hot air system or an air conditioning system in that attic space, she essentially is taking that heat unit or cooling unit and putting it outside the building with an umbrella over it. So now she pays more money to get the ductwork that's in that cold environment that's heating the space below. So the boiler or the furnace has to generate more heat to heat up the cold ductwork before it can heat up the house. So my answer to that question is definitely insulate the roof.
Let's get another caller. Another caller, as it happens, from St. Louis. Josh joins us.
Hi, I have a gas heating in my house, and I'm wondering if it's more cost-effective to buy small electric space heaters to heat the house.
Given the relative price of electricity and natural gas this coming winter.
Right.
Any ideas on that, Tom Silva?
Well, you have gas in the house now, and if you're going to go to the point of switching over to electricity, I can't stress the fact enough that by taking your existing house and simply tightening it in that house up and making the unit that you have more efficient by encapsulating your water heater with insulation, again, your water pipes, all of the lines from that system that's making heat in your house, increasing the insulation around your ductwork, making that system work easier will save you energy, and cutting down the drafts in your house makes a tremendous difference.
How do you go about detecting places in your house, windows and doors? Okay, but are there other places that are likely to leak heat?
Sure, probably around your electrical outlets, your switches, anything that on an exterior wall. I always like to go into, like, for example, up in New England, we have a lot of basements, and I always like to go into the basement in a house with the lights off on a sunny day, and I look around the perimeter for any signs of light. And if I see a crack or a hole or a void, fill it with a foam, an expandable foam. Closed cell insulation expands into those little cavities and actually cuts down on the drafts tremendously. In your attic, you can go up into the attic, and you can look for light shining down. So you go up in the attic during the night, turn the lights off, and you look for light shining through. whether or not it's coming up around the chimney, for example, or through recessed light fixtures, or your attic door. All of those things are leaking heat away and taking it away from you. So you want to basically keep it in the house.
We're going to continue talking about weatherproofing and conserving energy, as it looks like it's going to be a cold and expensive winter ahead. Our guest is Tom Silva of PBS's home improvement show, This Old House. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. The email address is totn@npr.org. We're going to take a short break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Right now we're discussing the Energy Department's winter fuel outlook and what consumers can do about it. Our guest is This Old House general contractor Tom Silva, who joins us from Boston. The PBS program has been running for a long time, Tom, and we're beginning to understand why. We're being deluged with phone calls and emails. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Scott. Scott calling from Alameda, California.
Wow, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Two great guys with two great shows. What a treat. Tom, I got a couple questions for you. I'm a renter.
Yep.
I used to live up in Tahoe, up in the snow, and when I was renting up there, we used to build little plastic inserts to go inside of our window frames to try and cut down on some of that, you know, try and trap some air between the window and the...
Absolutely.
And I'm wondering, do those work?
Absolutely. You can actually go to your local home center, and there's actually a product that you can buy that you you can get like 2, 3, or even 9 window or 10 window kit, depending on the size of your windows, for very inexpensively, anywhere between, I believe it's like they start at like $4 for 3 windows and $20, I think, take care of 10 windows. And all it is like a Saran Wrap product with some two-faced tape, that you simply take the two-faced tape and you put it around the perimeter of your window. You take this Saran Wrap-looking product and you stick it to the tape. You then take your hairdryer out and you hit it, and it shrinks and it becomes invisible.
And then you try to keep your 3-year-old away from it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, it's pretty tough.
Do you have any other tips for renters on things we can do that are low-cost ways we can insulate? Because my landlord's not going to pay for any sort of insulating in my place.
Well, simply by doing that around your windows makes a tremendous difference. Depending on the material that your windows are, obviously a wood window is very efficient. There's fiberglass windows. There's vinyl windows. A steel window is very cold because the steel is transmitted through the cold is transmitted through the steel. You want to pay attention to, again, as I can't stress this enough, so many people go through the winter with their windows. I don't care if it's an awning, a double hung, or a casement. They don't know enough to lock their windows. By locking the windows brings the windows tight against the steel of that window and makes a tremendous difference.
Scott, thanks very much for the call. Good luck this winter.
You guys.
And let's talk now with Joanna. Joanna calling from San Leandro in California.
Yes.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, the previous caller and I are about 3 miles apart. We live in a typical 50s ranch-style California home with the original windows. And in the master bedroom, it's a very large window, and it was just really letting in a lot of cold during the winter. And so I just took regular, like, polar fleece and put it on a tension rods so that there's one at the bottom and there's one at the top, and it can be brought down during the day to bring in the sunlight, and then at night you just put it up, and it made a big difference to what the temperature in there.
Medieval times they lived in castles, and how did they insulate against the cold? They used to use heavy draperies.
Right.
And they went into bed at night, they wrapped the bed with a blanket, so they slept in their little tent. Well, by basically putting a blanket over your window, the thicker the material and the more insulation or the backer you have on that window drapery, you're creating a blanket that seals the cold air out.
Yeah.
Joanna, thanks for the suggestion.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And here's an email from Ernie DeVries in Flagstaff, Arizona. You're up there in New England. Sometimes you think these people calling from San Leandro, California, and Flagstaff are just amateurs in this business. I'd like to hear from Tom Silva if there are any options for adding insulation to block construction walls. My home is built with no insulation inside the cinder block walls or between the drywall and block wall. I've already replaced my windows. I've added insulation to my attic. The walls are the only area I haven't been able to address. What can I do?
The insulation that goes inside the block walls. Well, years ago, and it can still get it, but there's actually a product that you can put into the block wall. It can be expensive, and I don't know if it's worth the payback, because you have to drill so many holes, and it goes in as a liquid. It's an open-cell insulation that would go into that cavity, run down inside the block wall, and then fill the bay. But with a block wall, there's so many different channels inside that wall that, you know, if you got 50% of it, you'd be 50% better off, but it's still an expensive process to do. The other way around it is to simply install a rigid foam insulation either on the interior or on the exterior, but again, it's only if you're going to renovate a room I would recommend doing it, because it can be expensive. So if you put a foam insulation against the block and then you parge or stucco or drywall over it, on your exterior of each room that you do, would make a tremendous difference. But it's one of those instances where you're either going to have to redo the outside of your house, or you're going to do it in steps as you renovate each room.
Tom Silva, thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Tom Silva joined us from Boston. He's a general contractor on PBS's This Old House. He's been on that team for 19 years. The November issue of This Old House magazine is on newsstands this Monday. It features new insulation options. For more tips on how to keep your heating costs down as the weather cools down, visit our website at npr.org.